Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome once again to another edition of Family Answer Man. Tonight is Thursday evening. The show airs Mondays and Thursdays at 8 p.m. Pacific, 11 p.m. Eastern Time. I may have mentioned before that we'll be changing in the some near future. We can get an earlier time. Just have to work on some scheduling issues. But lines are currently open. Toll free, you can call the show at 855-279-3758. That's 855-279-3758. This is an educational show not designed to take the place of psychotherapy or any kind of individual therapy that you might be in need of. So this is designed for informational purposes. We are discussing any topics related to family, marriage, parenting, relationships, boyfriend, girlfriend, such like that. My name's Jay Fitter. I'm a licensed family therapist. Been in practice for a little over 20 years. Currently working. My office is in Southern California. I also do parenting workshops all over Southern California and couples workshops as well that we do at various locations. Occasionally, I spend some time at Juvenile Hall visiting some of the minors there who didn't get the best parenting. Some of them got okay parenting, but just chose to make the choices that they made. What else about the show? Once again, remember, this is, even though I am a licensed family therapist, this show does not take the place of psychotherapy, but you can call with any questions related to relationships or issues like that. So once again, the phone number is 855-279-3758, 855-279-3758. Tonight we're going to do a bit of a review. I want to talk about some of the highlights, some of the things that we've touched on previous shows. If you want a little greater detail, you can go to blogtalkradio.com/JFitter to listen to all the episodes in their entirety. Also, once again, blogtalkradio.com/JFitter. You'll find all the episodes there with the different titles and such on them. Also, you can friend the show. Friend us at on Facebook at Family Answer Man. You click like, and then you will receive the updates on the various topics that will be coming up in future shows. So, let's talk a little bit about some of the things we've spoken on this, our first month here on the air. One of the topics that I've gotten a lot of feedback on was sexting. A lot of people don't know what sexting is. Sexting is basically when you are sending sexually explicit either words or photographs, usually over through cell phones. It's much more common and popular than a lot of adults realize. In a recent research that was done, it was found that 20% of teenage girls between the ages of 13 and 19 have sent a sexually explicit photograph to someone, at least one. Some of them have sent many. So basically, you're looking at one out of five girls between the ages of 13 and 19. So for many parents, say, well, my child would never do that. Well, you know, if you're with a group of five parents who each have a daughter, chances are one of them do or have done it. 30% of teens have received it, sometimes intentionally and sometimes inadvertently. I know my kids, when they were in school, had on more than one occasion received sexually explicit text without knowing even where it came from or who it was. It just showed up on their phone. The thing is about it, just briefly, is you talk to teens, and most of them view it as a game because it's quite popular. Let's say everybody does it. It's not a big deal. But the problems that you know, there's multiple problems, but a couple of the things that really stand out is you'll often have a girl sending it to her boyfriend because her boyfriend is like, you know, hey, I want to see, send me a, you know, picture of you. So she does it, and he promises he'll never show it to anybody else. It'll just be their little secret, which is sounds great until, like most high school relationships, they end up breaking up. And very often, the boy has a way of sort of getting back at the girl because he's angry or something else, starts sharing the picture with his friend. The next thing you know, half the boys in the school have a nude photograph of this girl, which often results in all kinds of problems where even to the extent of the girl leaving schools, which I've seen before because of names being called and the way she was perceived because her pictures were floating around like that. And it can go beyond that where you have people put it on the internet, and at which point then you basically can never get rid of it because it can be tapped around the world instantaneously and it can last forever. And which goes into then when these, you know, high school kids are having fun, one day they're out looking for a job. And nowadays, corporations will view social network profiles as a way when they're interviewing people for, you know, for positions. And if those kind of photos begin popping up, that can obviously have an influence over whether they get the job. It also, these are photographs that can be around when these high schoolers have their own children or even grandchildren one day. They can be, you know, on the internet. So it's the kind of thing that you can't get rid of, in, although the intent might be, well, it's just innocent having fun doing this, you know, with my boyfriend or something or girlfriend, that it can come back to haunt you. You know, one of the things in the news recently was Anthony Weiner, who is running for mayor in New York. I think he still is. I don't know if they've had the election yet or not, honestly. But he dropped significantly in the polls because it came out that he'd been, I guess, apparently on multiple times sent sexually explicit photographs and things over the internet. And this is what, I guess, caused him to end up having to resign from Congress, and now is affecting his run for mayor. So you can see that this is something that not just teens deal with, but adults as well, and it can have disastrous consequences. Another side that often people don't realize is that when teens send out these things, and sometimes you have kids who, you know, in high school, 18, 19 years old, get them on their phone, they're in essence can be considered an adult having being in possession of child pornography, which can result in all kinds of problems with the law. So this is one of those things that's very important that parents are able to talk to the kids about. So that's sort of a little bit overview of that. Briefly, we had one show where we talked about spanking and pros and cons of, you know, what's beneficial or not. One of the things we realize is that kids who are spanked a lot often tend to act out that same kind of behavior when they're at school. So the idea that if I want someone to do something, I can use force and I can hurt them to get them to do what I want, because that's how they're perceived at, that's how they perceive at home, is, you know, when my parents want me to do something and I don't do it, they'll spank me and I will do it. They'll hurt me. So children often, when you find the kids for bullies and things at school and get in trouble for various trouble fighting and things like that, these are often kids who themselves were spanked and things at home. So there is a correlation between those two. Another thing people talk about, you know, spanking, well, you know, hey, you know, it happened to me when I was a kid, so, you know, no big deal. And the problem is that people often who spank their kids do it sometimes 2-3 times a week. And my question always to them is, you know, if it was so successful, if it worked so well, why do you have to keep doing it? And the reality is it doesn't really work that well. But sometimes there are situations that may call for some parents who believe spanking is a way to deal with specific behaviors. But one thing that I always caution against: if you have anger management problems, if you really have trouble controlling your anger, you should never spank, because you're going to end up doing something more than you plan to, and it's going to go way too far. So a person who has anger management problems should never spank. There's also the issue we discussed as far as CPS. You know, if a child is spanked and there are marks or something on the child and they go to school, CPS gets called, and that just becomes an absolute nightmare. I work with people who are involved in CPS, and they give them a list of things they want them to do, and then maybe when they do, they'll get all those things done. They may get their kids back. They may not get their kids back, or they end up showing up at your house at 8 o'clock at night to do a inspection or visit your children at school and such like that. So it's sort of it's quite a nightmare once you get into the system to get out of it. I always like to look at the idea of the carrot or the stick. You know, the stick is being reused as spanking. But you think about the carrot as setting up incentives for our children, setting up rewards for doing the right things instead of just punishing them for doing the wrong things. Often you get much more success that way. You know the old saying, you catch more flies with honey than you do with vinegar. You know, trying to look at the fact that if a child sees incentives in things, that they're going to be more likely to want to do it instead of just out of fear. It's sort of the same way we work as adults. I mean, how many of us as adults would go to our job if there wasn't incentives built into it? If we didn't get a paycheck, chances are most of us wouldn't, if we found out today we weren't getting a paycheck anymore, most of us wouldn't show up to work tomorrow morning. So it's just a reality that kids are really no different in that respect. So we can set up positive reinforcements for appropriate kinds of behavior. It doesn't just have to be a negative thing. And that's where I got into another topic we spent a lot of time on talking about punishment versus discipline, the difference between the two of them. There is definitely a difference. Why don't you consider that punishment is spontaneous, okay? It's done without thinking. It's basically a form of retaliation. It's done out of anger. And its objective is often to hurt. I am angry. I'm going to hurt you, and I'm retaliating for what you did. You did something I told you not to do, and do it, and which is fine. It's basically just a way of letting out our anger or our frustration over something that's going on. And it's not geared to do anything other than to help us through our frustration or our anger. Whereas discipline, on the other hand, is actually goal-oriented. It's designed to teach. So when you're talking about your child doing something wrong or something right as an issue, if you spend the time actually thinking, how can I teach? What can we do to help them to learn from this experience, not just simply vent our own frustration? Discipline is directly related to the offense. A child does something wrong, that the consequences are directly related to that, so they learn from that. And once again, discipline can be positive or negative. Take 5 seconds. I got to take a drink of water here. Can't talk so much. I'm used to sitting in the office all day and listening. So when I have to talk a lot, it takes its toll. So rewarding the positive behavior is much more successful in accomplishing your goals, what you want from your children, as opposed to just waiting for them to do something wrong. Sometimes you'll find in school, for kids for the most part, they view any attention better than negative. Basically, any attention is better than no attention at all. So even if it is negative attention, if they're getting in trouble, it's better than not getting noticed at all. And that's one of the things that you see in school a lot of times. A teacher only pays attention to the kids who are messing up. They're always having to correct the children who are doing something wrong or, you know, acting up, getting out of their seats and stuff like that. While the child who's on task and doing what they're supposed to do is being ignored. So often the message they get is, you know, to get attention from the teacher, I have to act out. I have to do something wrong. And that's where I often work. I do workshops at times with teachers as well about how to reinforce behaviors at school, how to, in essence, catch children being good, not just look for the negative. And as parents, we can do the same thing, catch our children being good and then reward that and giving them that attention when they're doing the right things instead of just giving them attention when they're doing the wrong things. Another area we discussed on one of the other shows was keeping the fire burning in marriage. That's something that a lot of people struggle with. One of the problems is so often we get so involved with our kids' lives, whether it be Little League or cheer or soccer or, you know, karate. They're doing so many things that, you know, we're driving them all over, doing things like and such for them, that the problem is then our kids get older, they leave the home, and we pretty much don't know the person we're living with. It's like, gosh, you know, we've drifted so far apart because our focus has been everywhere else but our marriage. And unless we work consciously to build and develop that relationship, it's not going to last. And so many relationships fall apart when kids move out because the parents realize, my gosh, I don't want to spend the rest of my life with this person. I don't even know who this person is. So keeping the fire burning, but though, it's not all about just, it's not just sex. It's not just, okay, we have to have more sex. There's a lot to keeping a relationship strong and healthy. One of the some of the things that I encourage people to do when I work with couples as far as building their relationship is begin developing and understanding common interests that you have. This is not talking about after the kids leave. I'm talking about when the kids are still at home, having this time. Because remember, you are role modeling. You're role modeling how to be a parent and how to be a husband and how to be a wife. So begin developing. Begin taking the time, whether it's playing a sport together. It could be gardening. It could be hiking. It could be anything that we enjoy doing together. It could be starting to take a class together. Maybe there isn't time when the kids are young, but maybe this is something that it grows toward as the kids are moving out, there you have more time. And you look at it as an opportunity instead of the kids are gone, empty nest. It's like now we can take that pottery class we wanted to take together, or we can learn how to paint or a dance class or something. Those are things that, you know, can build and make a relationship stronger and make it last through those times after the kids leave. It's also learning how to listen. We're all pretty good at talking, but when it comes to listening, that can be tough sometimes. We're so busy wanting to get our point across that what we need to realize is that one of the most important parts of communication is listening. You know, I've heard people say before, well, that's why God gave us two ears and only one mouth, you know, to spend a little more time listening than talking. So that's something that tells your partner. You listening, that tells your partner what you have to say is important to me. Okay, people want to be heard. And if I feel like I come home and I talk to my wife and she's like, yeah, fine, but what about this? This is going on. I'm going to feel like, you know what, you don't really care what I'm thinking about or what's going on. And that's going to begin to drive a wedge in the relationship. And as far as sex is concerned, some people are really wrapped up in the whole idea, you know, that, oh, sex is dirty, it shouldn't be that. That's often comes from junk that we were kind of put on us when we were kids and stuff. Reality is, sex in a marriage is a very healthy thing, a very important thing. And it's okay to be creative, to be spontaneous. You know, behind closed doors, you and your spouse, it's okay to make things interesting, to shake things up a little bit. The important thing to keep in mind, though, is respecting each other's boundaries. There might be one partner saying, you know, I really am interested in doing this. The other person says, you know what, that's not something I feel comfortable with. That's okay then. You don't have to do that. But be creative, be spontaneous, be willing to try new things. As long as you're not forcing something on your partner and where they have boundaries where they don't feel comfortable. So that's sort of an overview of some of the stuff, but really is not, you know, it's just a small bit of each of the of some of the topics we've talked about. If you want to hear more, you can go to blogtalkradio.com/jfitter, and you can listen to any of the episodes. They have titles. You can listen to the ones that look interesting. Listen to all of them. I recommend listening to all of them personally. Also, go on Facebook. You can friend the show by clicking like on Family Answer Man. And there you'll get updates on future shows and topics, as well as you can submit your questions to that on Facebook. So you don't have to call in the show. You can actually just submit questions directly on Family Answer Man on the show page, the fan page there. And I will address them on the air, but I will not mention your name if you'd like me not to, so that way they will keep it confidential. Let's see. I mentioned where you can call the show. You can also call the show, the office for the show, directly at 951-272-8304. Once again, 951-272-8304. If you have questions about seminars, parenting, relationship workshops, anything like that, or any other issues you want to talk about that you would like to have other services as far as therapy and such like that goes, you can call the office, like say, directly, 951-272-8304. And I think that about covers it. So that's it for this evening. Once again, there will be no show on Monday because it is Labor Day. So we will see you again on next Thursday. Have a good evening.